Hi, this is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation of Bismarck. And welcome to another edition of Recovery Chronicles. This is a half-hour interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. And by all means, we have a special guest today, and I know her and have known her for a little while. Her name is Shannon Huber. And she's from the Bismarck-Mandan area. Not only is she a person in recovery, but she's a practicing addiction counselor, and she's been doing that for about 20 years. So we're going to ask her some questions about addiction counseling and addiction in general in Bismarck-Mandan. So welcome to the program.
And thank you.
Thanks for having the courage to come on the program and talk about your life. I mean, you seem fearless about that. Why would you want to share your recovery story on the radio?
I think it's very important that we get the message out there that we just need the stigma of this being a negative disease to go away, and that people can get into recovery long term from drugs and alcohol. And for today, I'm clean and sober, and I want other people to know that there's help out there.
Yeah. And how long have you been clean and sober?
I have been sober for 25 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That gives all of us, and I've told our audience that I'm a person in long-term recovery also, but it gives us all so much hope. And I'm proud of the fact that people like you and others are willing to, you know, come out of the closet about their addiction, because it creates that awareness that we need right now. So thanks again. So when did, shall we call it a love affair? I mean, the love affair is over, but when did the so-called love affair with drugs begin? When did you first discover that, maybe I like this feeling?
Well, I was a very, very shy child. Which I was probably just didn't have any self-esteem or any self-confidence. And when I was 9 years old, I had gone over to my girlfriend's house, and I had a crush on her older brother. And he had vodka. So we proceeded to play a card game. Mm-hmm. And my first time drinking at 9 years old, I had 5 shots of vodka.
Whoops.
Yeah. And I blacked out. I was a blackout drinker for the rest of my drinking career.
Yeah, I pretty much was too. And we forgot to mention, or I wanted to mention, that you're a mom with children and you're in your 50s.
You know?
So you've been around a little bit. But did it progress? So that was kind of your first experience with alcohol?
Yes, it definitely progressed. And it wasn't just alcohol. Mm-hmm. That by the end of my drinking, I needed 20 shots of alcohol to get that desired effect. Mm. But I was also using other drugs along with the alcohol.
Such as?
I was using methamphetamines, speed.
In what way? How were you using meth? I mean, snorting?
I was snorting meth.
Yeah.
And back in the day, you know, it wasn't as popular as it is now. So that's all we did was snort it. And then the smoking and injecting came later on.
It did.
And I wasn't a part of that.
Yeah. 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 Well, and I'm about a dozen years older than you are, I guess, but still, in the 1970s, for example, I remember what we call speed, which is methamphetamine.
Right.
And I remember it in the form of White Crosses, for example.
Yeah.
Do you? I mean,
remember White Cross. Yep, yeah.
And definitely. It was a drug that truck drivers tended to use. It might have even been in a song. I mean, if I recall, but
I bet if we looked hard enough, we could find it in a song.
Yeah. And it was popular. Let's put it that way. It was very popular. And who was it? Jacqueline Susan wrote a book called Valley of the Dolls. I think that was in the 1960s.
Yes,
but
it was.
The dolls referred to dexedrine, which was a diet pill, which again was was a form of meth or amphetamine.
Yeah,
and so it does go back in our country's history, but you said it's not the kind of today. It's just meth got really, really bad about a decade ago, kind of went away a little bit. Now it's really, really bad again. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of clients come in and IV use and smoking the methamphetamine. Rarely do we have clients come in that are smoking or just snorting the meth. So,
And we should mention that Shannon works at New Freedom in Bismarck here, and as you know, I work for Heartview. Same thing, and so many youngsters,
very young.
Meth. Doesn't that break your heart?
It does. Yeah. It does. You know, no matter what age, it's just so hard to. It's so hard to see people sad walking through those doors, thinking that they're never going to have fun again, and their life is over, and all the losses that they've had because of their substance use.
Yeah, and at such a tender age at times. So back to you, let's go back to the progression of your addiction, your disease.
It
progressed from what to what?
So when I was 19 or 9 years old, I continued to use, and at 19 it was really bad. And I would use absolutely anything. I just wanted to get high. I wanted to feel different. I wanted to fit in with a certain group of people, what I thought were the cool people. Mm-hmm. So my disease progressed, and I got married. And I was using methamphetamine, and my husband at the time was doing cocaine. What I found is I didn't like cocaine as much because the high didn't last as long. And with methamphetamine, the high lasted, at least a whole day.
Yeah.
And with cocaine, it was only 20 minutes, whatever. So my husband ultimately ended up dying from a cocaine overdose.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
And it's amazing how death does not scare us straight. Mm. I used his death. Now I can talk about it. I'm very ashamed of what I did now. But I think it's also very important to share with the public that that's what I did. Death does not scare people straight. I continued to use and used his death as a way for people to stay away from me so I could continue to use. Very selfish disease.
No.
We had a son, and he was almost 3, so he was 2. When
he lost his father.
When he lost his father, yes.
Yeah.
So kids, death does not scare us straight.
Yeah.
This disease is powerful.
Yeah. That's quite a story. I'll bet people have asked you if you've written a book.
No, they told me I should.
Yeah, because that's a very sad story. So how bad did it get? I mean, as it says in the 12 steps, I mean, did your life become unmanageable? And when did you realize you needed help, et cetera?
Well, I was in real denial because I didn't have any legal problems. It didn't matter that I was neglecting my son, not in a physical abusive way, but neglecting him from taking him to school on time, getting him what he needed, getting him enrolled in certain activities. I was not paying my bills on time or at all because drinking and drugs are definitely expensive. So I had no desire to get into treatment, none at all. And when my parents brought to my attention that I have a problem, I just thought they were the ones with the problem. They're crazy. It's not me.
Yeah. How dare they suggest?
How dare they?
Are you from here?
From Dickinson originally.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So, they did end up, convincing me to go and get a drug and alcohol eval. And I'm like, yep, I'll do that. And I'll lie the entire time during my eval. Mm. And that darn counselor, he put me in treatment, outpatient treatment. So, and I still see him and give him a bad time about it. Yeah. But because of him, I was able to get the help that I needed. You know, and I think there's this myth out there too that, oh, you have to want to get better. You know, we are so sick. We don't realize how sick we are with our disease, that not everybody wants to go into to treatment and get better.
Yeah.
That's a whole lifestyle change. So I did, I had no intentions of getting sober at that time. And then just like series of events, things started happening to me. Like I had a couple dollars in my pocket. I had a better relationship with my son. It took about 6 months to a year before I was able to forgive my parents and realize what a great gift they gave me.
Oh, and again, how old were you at the time? About
I was 27.
Okay.
At that time.
Yeah. That's pretty much exactly when I started sobering up. I was age 27.
Oh, really?
Age 27, 28, because I'm in my 60s now, and I crashed my second car. I rolled it.
Oh.
And then I decided, and thank God I didn't hurt anybody else, but then I decided that indeed this was a matter of life and death. So you went to treatment, and did you have more than one treatment? You said you went to outpatient therapy.
Yes, that was my second treatment. My first treatment was when my husband and I, actually we spent our first anniversary in treatment.
Yeah.
And our son was 6 months old. And so that was strange, but we were both in treatment together at the same time.
I see.
And I was able to stay sober for a couple months, but I didn't have a really good support system. And so I went back to my old friends and my old ways and started using again, because it's lonely in the beginning of recovery.
You have to get a whole new set of friends.
Yeah. And a whole, well, what do I like? I don't even know what I like. So clean and sober. Yeah. So,
and I should mention, you're listening to Recovery Chronicles on KDAC FM radio. Our guest today is Shannon Huber, who's from Bismarck here, or lives in Bismarck here. And she's not only a person in recovery, but she's an addiction counselor. And you've been doing this for 20 years. It's nice. It's nice to have the perspective of a counselor.
Yeah.
You said you spent the first many years of counseling, counseling children.
Yep. I was working with adolescents for 18 years.
Yeah. What's the particular attraction there for, what was the attraction for you there? And
it just seemed like that. It was just something that I fell into and continue to fall into, working with kids and young teenagers. And it's so nice now when I see them and or they find me on Facebook and they're like, thanks for helping me. And oh, what a wonderful reward that is.
Yeah. Any reason why we can't mention where you worked? Is it, would you rather not, or that you worked in Mandan? At the, can we mention where you worked?
Yeah.
Youth Correctional.
Yep. Worked at the Youth Correctional Center and worked at West Central Human Service Center for a while. So.
Right. And I should mention, and I'm a fairly new counselor in comparison. And Shannon was actually part of my training. So.
Yes.
We had part of my training program. Let's put it that way. So.
So, and it was always wonderful to see you.
Well, it was we always had a good time. So, tell us more about those early months or years when you got it, when sobriety and recovery settled in.
When it settled in, just good things started happening. Just little things, and you know, I didn't have this big thing happened to me that lives like, oh, this is just amazing. Little things. I remember I was flying somewhere and I was just sober probably a month. And the ticket agent said, you know, hey, come here. And he put me in first class. And I was like, oh. And being able to have conversations with friends that wasn't all drama and all this happened, and it wasn't about drinking or alcohol or drinking or drug drama. It was just having regular conversations. And then just getting jobs, you know, that I did work at Heartview as a chemical dependency tech for a while. And, you know, so things just fell into place for me. And I was just very, very lucky. I know when I decided to go to school to be an addiction counselor, they say, oh, everybody wants to do that. Don't do that. You know, a lot of people were trying to talk me out of it. And so I went anyway, because I don't listen to others well still. Part of it. And I am so glad and just so privileged to be able to have the career that I've had for 20 years.
Would you call it a calling?
I absolutely think it's a calling.
We all know it doesn't pay much, but
exactly. You know, as far as, but I just,
in comparison to other maybe healthcare careers, but
I just enjoy going to work every single day. And
what's the most rewarding part of being an addiction counselor for you?
The most rewarding part is when people connect with you, like if they've been sober for a year or many, many years, or something you said to them always stuck with them, and or you just ruin their drinking and drugs, you know. It's like, oh geez, you know, thinking about Shannon, I can't use, it's not any fun. So the most rewarding is seeing people that come back and say, hey, thanks, and it's like, I didn't do it, you did it. But I love when people come back and they're changing their lives, and they're having kids and careers, and that's what really neat.
Do you still like working with young people?
Yes, we still have younger people, but not adolescents. I like the change in working from adolescents with adults. I like that change. So it's been, just keeps my career going. So getting all aspects of working with different ages of people.
So here's a question for you as a counselor, and you've been in the business for a couple of decades. How have you seen the face of addiction in Bismarck, Mandan, or in North Dakota change?
When I first started, you know, we would just see alcohol and pot. That just was always a constant. And then we saw some meth back, you know, 20 years ago. And then that went away for a few years. And now it's the opiates. The meth has really come back. And alcohol and pot will always be there, because
alcohol is king. I mean, and it has been. And I'm not sure it will ever be unseated. Well,
and so
for one thing, it's legal.
And the hardest part, I think, for me working with people is, you know, that pot doesn't hurt you. Pot's better. You know, that's the most frustrating part. Yeah, pot makes you lazy and you no motivation, and you know, you eat a lot, and you know, it definitely alters your brain and the chemicals in your brain. And so,
It makes you sit back or just go, wow. You know, I'm not glorifying it. And you know, as a matter of fact, I made the statement this morning. I was running a group this morning, and I made the statement that, that probably every addiction counselor I know is against the legalization of of pot or cannabis for recreational use. Because we know that a minimum of 10% of the people who use it will become addicted to it.
And they don't understand that it is a gateway drug. You know, if you're gonna dip into pot, it's gonna be easier for you to dip in the meth and the opiates and the mushrooms and all of those. And I've done 10,000 usage histories in my career, and it's 99.5% it's alcohol, pot, and then meth and opiates and mushroom. You know, it's nobody ever starts out just doing meth and opiates. So
yeah. Do you think, again, another question as an addiction counselor, do you think most people who live in Bismarck, Mandan, or who live in North Dakota or Western North Dakota would be surprised to see what you see or to know what you know, about addiction?
Absolutely. I think that, so many people are uninformed about this disease. They're so uninformed about what is really going on out there in our community. Mm. They think people can just stop, opiate, heroin, it's dangerous. Why don't they just stop? It doesn't work that way. So I just encourage people to just get informed about what is going on in the community. Mm. And that's really what we need, is people to get informed so they can support that person coming out of recovery.
Yes.
Or out of treatment, not out of recovery, stay in recovery, but out of treatment. And that's really the, I think, our largest defect in this area is not having enough resources for people. There's a lot of, there's so much shame and guilt. People don't want to talk about it. So, if your child is using, people keep that a secret and they don't want to tell anybody. Mm. But I think it's so important that parents start to talk to each other, no matter how old your children are or your spouse, or that people talk about this disease and what is out there for resources. Because we do have a lot of resources out there.
Yes.
I mean, there's New Freedom, there's HeartView, and there's so many more resources out there.
And that's why I'll compliment the State Department of Human Resources. If you see the PSAs on television about the Parents Lead campaign, which encourages parents to keep on talking to your children about alcohol and drugs. And I know I do, and I've raised four children, but then again, it's kind of comes natural for me. But you can call these clinics and or Department of Human Services, et cetera, and ask for guest speakers to come to your school, your church.
Yes.
It's not that difficult.
Right.
So, yeah.
And people don't realize that, just call. Somebody will be there.
And I should say, and I wasn't setting up to do a commercial about HeartView, but there's a Monday night group at HeartView called HEART, H-E-A-R-T, helping everyone achieve recovery today. That's what the H-E-A-R-T stands for.
That's awesome.
And it's free of charge, and it's at 6 o'clock on Monday evenings, and it's open to the public, period.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's for people who, and HeartView's is on First and Broadway, but it's for parents who are worried about their children and or spouses, friends, all of the above, and no obligation, and it's free. So.
And they need more information. That's awesome that you guys do that.
Yeah, exactly. We certainly view it as a community service. So as you, let's get back to you personally. So as you look back on your days of using, and now this is some time ago, but as you look back on your, what they call your recovery journey, what are your overriding thoughts?
As far as being in recovery?
How far you've come and things like that.
Never did I think that, I would, like I said, I didn't want to go into treatment and I had no desire to stay sober. So,
because you were having too much fun, right?
I thought I thought I was a fun drunk, and then my family informed me otherwise. So when I sit here with you today, Tom, and I'm 25 years sober, it is one day at a time. I don't get ahead of myself. I know I have rests, but I've really embraced having this disease and saying, thank you, God, for giving me this disease because I'm able to move forward. When I think about using, it got really bad. Like I said, I was a blackout drinker, and I would wake up every morning and I would think, I have to quit drinking. I don't even remember what I did. I was literally losing parts of my life.
Same
by
here.
5 o'clock, I'm drinking again.
Yep.
you know, and that's, I don't think, you know, we understand how powerful and how much this disease takes from us. So as I've moving forward into my recovery and the things that I've accomplished and been able to do with my life, it's just incredible. I just feel so lucky every day.
And now you're saving lives.
Well, I don't know. So. I hope
so.
Well,
you know you are. tell us a little bit about, I happen to know that you have put together a presentation right now, that kind of a presentation of hope that you're offering to the public.
Yeah, it's called Kissing the Past Goodbye, and I've been just going around North Dakota and getting more awareness to people who are unable to have the courage to call and ask for help. And it's also for people that are in recovery, people that may be stuck in life. And you don't even necessarily have to have this disease, but it is about hope moving forward and what we, you know, moving up to that next level in life. And it's called, you know, because we carry around so much baggage, shame, guilt. You know, we can't change the past. We have to move forward. So that's why it's called Kissing the Past Goodbye and moving forward. So, yeah, I've been doing that. And it's been a lot of fun. I've met some amazing people.
And you have a Facebook presence, don't you, if I'm not mistaken?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and so I'm just saying, if people wanted to get a hold of you, they could maybe do it through Facebook. And again, you're listening to Recovery Chronicles on KDAC, and our guest is Shannon Huber.
Yep.
And she's a person in long-term recovery, and she's also an addiction counselor. And we're almost out of time. I told you the half hour would absolutely fly by, but what would your, as a final question here, what would your advice be to someone who is listening now and who knows they have a problem and they need some help? What should they do?
Absolutely. Reach out to anybody that you trust and get the help that you need. There are support groups out there. There is treatment out there, individual counseling. Make that first step. We can't do this alone. Don't think for a minute that you are alone, because you aren't alone. Reach out to somebody and get the help that you need.
And the phrase that we use is that that addiction is three words. That addiction is cunning, baffling, and powerful.
Yep, and it absolutely is. And
truly. How many times did you try to quit on your own, for example?
Oh,
you know?
When I think about all the times I tried, that's when I knew that I had a problem because I couldn't do it on my own.
And I've told people, I've told patients, I think I've tried to quit maybe 500 times. You know why I can say that? Because every time I tried to pass the liquor store on the way home from work,
it was just right in your face.
And I
right?
said, I'm not going to stop today.
And then you stopped.
Yeah. So I had quit up until I got up to the store there.
And then.
Or sometimes I turned around. Well, listen, if you don't mind, again, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
This is I can't wait for this program to be broadcast. And we try to close each, close each session with the Serenity Prayer.
Awesome.
If you want to pray with me, and that is, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Shannon. You talk too fast.
I do. Thanks,
Tom.